Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Hello, and thanks for joining the Dialogue with Wirepoints. My name is Ted Dabrowski, and I'm president of Wirepoints, and I'm joined by founder and executive editor Mark Glennon. And today we have joining us on our show Devin Jones from the city of Chicago. Devin is from the Chicago South Side, in particular the Ashburn neighborhood, and he's here to break down for us many of the problems in Chicago's inner city, and in particular how we might go about making real change there. I was recently recommended to meet Devin as part of Wirepoint's work on diagnosing the homicide problem in Chicago, and I was lucky enough to have a lunch with Devin at the Starlight restaurant right there on 83rd and South Kedzie. And I was struck in talking to him, and I think he might describe himself as a black conservative. We're all labeling each other these days, but he might say that's what he is. I'll let him, ferret that out. But what I was struck was that identity politics weren't any part of the conversation. And instead, it was Devin pitching for things that most Americans or most Chicagoans want. And I'll let him kind of describe what those things are. But what I did like is that he used logic, reason, persuasion to make his case. So before we get started, just four bullet points I want to make. Look, it's no secret that minorities in Chicago are really struggling. Black homicides have hit a three-decade high. CPS has lost over 100,000 kids in the last 20 years, and less than 25% of minority kids in 11th grade can read at grade level. We've seen data that shows that nearly 50% of young Blacks in the 20 to 24 age range either don't have jobs or aren't in school. And what we do know is that Blacks are leaving Chicago in droves. Nearly 200,000 Blacks left Chicago from 2000 to 2010, and another 85,000 have left in the last decade. So there's a lot of problems there. And I think what we want to do today with Devin is, how do we understand how to better understand how to improve lives for a vast number of Chicagoans who are struggling? That's a key goal of this talk. And before we get into the issues, Devin, why don't you give us a quick bio of who you are and what you're doing to bring about change in the South and West sides of Chicago?
Sure. So I'm Devin Jones. I am 35. I'm a U.S. Navy veteran. I'm a former Catholic school teacher. I taught theology and Latin. I'm a former and current nonprofit leader. I run a nonprofit called Renaissance, which tries to actually help that 18 to 25 range group get into entrepreneurship and kind of navigate the complicated state system of registering a business and stuff like that. I'm also the 18th Ward Republican Committeeman, which is the southwest side of Chicago, the greater Ashburn community, and a little part of Auburn Gresham. And I also have a small business where I do sexual assault prevention and response victim advocacy as a contractor for the military and other organizations. I stopped teaching because I took in two of my homeless students who are now in college, and they're 21 and 22. My goal is just to make Chicago a more habitable community for my neighbors, which spans from the South Side all the way up to the North Side. We are one Chicago, and people talk about being Chicago strong, but right now the residents are in a weakened position because of complicated and corrupt policies in our city, county, and state.
Yeah, Devin, Mark Glennon here. Thanks for joining us. But tell us a little bit more about your ward, where you're the GOP committeeman. I've heard you describe it earlier. Sometimes we think of the city minority neighborhoods as kind of monolithic, but you've got a lot of homeowners. I mean, middle class. I grew up in the south suburbs there. It gradually became quite integrated while I was growing up. Same thing there. I mean, a lot of folks that I thought are basically the same as all the rest of us. They're homeowners trying to get their backs to pay taxes, keep the kids in school, worrying about the schools and all the same things that everybody else does. And it wasn't really typical of what you hear from the city very often. Is that the case in your area, or what do you think about that?
Sure. So I grew up in the same ward that I now currently live in, serve the military from there. When I moved in, it was a majority Irish Catholic ward, and we were one of the first Black families to move into the ward. And there was really no difference. It was cops and firefighters and city workers. you know, those kind, that kind of blue collar South Side that you always hear about. And as Black people moved in, it was literally the same group of people, just a different ethnicity. And we lived in harmony. You know, we've never really had a lot of, we had some white flight, if you will, but not a lot. You know, the New York Times, I believe, wrote an article about Ashburn being a model of integration in Chicago, I think in 2000 or 2001. Which would have been when I was a freshman in high school. Now we have an increasingly Hispanic population. It's a very diverse ward, about 55% Black, and then the rest is split between white and Hispanic. Majority homeowners, stable home values. We have some of the highest as far as home income. It hasn't really fluctuated. Our property values haven't really dropped. They've maintained, they've, you know, been relatively stable. We have very little crime, and the crime that we do have is kind of pass through crime along 79th Street. So people coming from another neighborhood committing crimes and then going back, you know, whether it be shootings, which is something that I think most communities deal with. But really, it is the model to me of what the South Side of Chicago really could be and is, what I always grew up thinking that it was. And so most of our problems are, you know, making sure we have adequate public safety so that we can stop some of this pass-through crime, but also, you know, increasing taxes and fees. You know, we have to go, we're at the southwest edge of the city. We have to leave the city to go buy our groceries. So we're crossing out of the city and that money's not staying in our community. We have to leave the city to go buy gas. You know, we have to figure out ways to save money so that we can pay the tickets and boot fees that we're getting, because they're just randomly ticketing cars and stuff in my neighborhood, and because they know we can pay it. And so that's kind of the neighborhood. It's a very bedroom-like community. It's like our own little Mayberry in the city of Chicago, you know.
The first question, you know, is going to be obviously how often you get the Uncle Tom thing, you know, as a GOP committeeman. I'm not sure it's even fair to call you a conservative. I think you're no hardcore right-wing crazy. You know, you're moderately to the right of center, right, from what I can tell. But how often you get pushback on the national level? We often see that, but does it really happen at the level of street politics where you get pushback from whites or other African Americans?
I have only been called an Uncle Tom by white liberals, oddly enough. I have never been called an Uncle Tom from other Black people. And I go into Inglewood, Roseland. As we speak, I just got done with an Auburn Gresham health fair marketing the Republican party to my neighbors in Auburn Gresham, who are 99% Black. I register voters. People signed up to be Republican election judges with me just today as we speak. And, you know, I always get the, you're a Republican. I've never met a Republican like you, you know, but I think it's in how people present themselves. These people know that I am for our community. You know, I grew up in the neighborhood, so I'm for my neighbors. And I always approach things from that. If you don't want to talk about Trump or being a Republican, let's talk about the issues you have. Is your alderman not getting you a garbage can? Well, let me make some calls and put pressure on some people for you and with you. And so I think that if we start to, you know, as conservatives, as Republicans, if we start to actually engage with the community and meet the issues that people have, you know, sometimes public safety might not be the first thing that's on someone's mind today. It literally might be, I need an extra garbage can. My recycle bin has holes in it. And that's all they need today, right now. And so I will focus on that immediate need. And then we can talk about public safety and taxes and fees.
Tick through the rest of the list. Tell us what issues you do find to be important besides those very local issues. Or is it really just the local issues that they're focused
on? It overwhelmingly is local issues. It is, again, public safety is a local issue. You know, so people want to see cops in their neighborhood, but we don't. You know, and that's from the best to the worst neighborhood. It's not an issue of living in Inglewood versus Ashburn. Our police resources are just not utilized wisely. A lot of people are upset about high rent, which also goes into high property taxes and some of the licensing and complications that government goes through. A lot of the people that I was talking to today, just today, they were saying, you know, I would like to open up a business, but I have to navigate through this corrupt system. I have to either make a relationship with someone that I don't even know or don't know how to make a relationship with them. And so they just don't know how to live in Chicago because it's too complicated. And so that's what people really are focused on. High property taxes, poor educational system, not understanding where public safety resources are. It's almost like the only thing that works is the fire department.
Devin, when you and I talked the other day at lunch, I was struck by the comments you made on education, because, you know, as I mentioned, the education, the performance levels are very, very low in the schools. And so obviously the schools are passing people along. If the kids can't read in third grade, well, they'll let mm-hmm. them go to fourth and so on. And so you've got kids who are, you know, young adults who are graduating, but just can't read it or do math at the right levels. So you talked about helping them because they're kind of stuck and it's really hard for them to maneuver. Like you said, either trying to get a home or trying to get a business or start a business or be an entrepreneur. So what were some of the things you were saying that you were trying to do and help? And what do you think needs to happen there to make life easier?
So because we've had such a poor educational system in Chicago for decades, especially in the Black community, but I think it's been there across the board. It hasn't been a system that has allowed people to really compete in a global economy. A lot of people don't even understand things like how to read a property tax bill, how to open a business, and what is this piece of paper that the government is telling me I have to fill out, and how much is the actual fee for the liquor license, the building license, the sign license, so on and so forth. So what I try to do is to connect people to, if I can understand it and I can read it and help them with these applications, with navigating this system, then I do it myself, or I find other like-minded committee men, precinct captains. If I have to find an attorney, then I try to find attorneys that can partner with these people so that they can really feel the full force of the state and federal constitution, which is something that we don't really understand in Chicago. We understand the Chicago way, which is not the American way. And so that's kind of the thing that I do is really help people to navigate through these complications of government system. And I also, if people want to find an alternative to a failed public education, whether it's homeschooling, whether it's a Catholic school education, a private school education, I try to find them the funding, the resources, the books, whatever it is. I try to partner people with a solution to whatever their problem is.
And if we were trying to fix those public schools, you got any thoughts about how to do that? You know, there's a debate about whether throwing more money at them really makes a difference. That's always been a debate among educators. Right now, at least, Chicago public schools are kind of rolling in money, and because of the federal help and because on a per student basis, they do get quite a bit. But would that help, or what would we do to fix the public schools?
I don't think they need more money. I think they need to utilize the resources that they already have appropriately. The Catholic school system in the Archdiocese of Chicago spends something like half of what the public school system does, and they take the same kids and turn them into successful, productive members of society. I worked at Holy Angels Catholic School in the Bronzeville neighborhood on the south side for years, and we would literally take kids from the neighboring public schools, give them full scholarships, which, you know, we didn't have the money to do, but we did it. And we would turn kids, that third graders that were reading at a kindergarten level, by the end of the year, they were reading at a third and fourth grade level. By the time they graduated, they were reading well above their grade level. So it's not an issue of throwing more money at a failed system. It's an issue of that failed system utilizing the human resources and the money that they're taking from us in property taxes, sales taxes, and utilizing them appropriately, you know, actually putting resources in the classroom and not to a teacher's union.
Yeah, I had a chance to do some school choice work in Waukegan. And, you know, I found that people didn't know what that term was. You know, what is school choice? Because it doesn't exist really in a major way in Illinois. And it recently has come about through some of these tax credit scholarships. When you talk to people in the community, do they know what school choice is, or do you have to explain it to them? Is it something hard? Is it a hard sell, or when people learn about it, they get it and they want it?
A lot of people start off thinking that it's an issue between public schools and public charter schools, which I try to break people out of that, because even the public charter schools are failing. And so I explain to people that there are, it's more than just that. It's whatever you want to do in order to educate your child. So if you are able to homeschool, then by all means homeschool, you know, and here are the resources for that. And I tell people what the resources are. And if you want to send your kid to a Catholic school or a Lutheran school, whatever the case may be, I try to hit home that school choice literally means that. It's not just the difference between two public schools competing with each other, but how whatever the best education for your child is that's going to allow them to compete, that's what you need to be aiming for.
Where'd you go to high school yourself, by the way?
I went to every type of school you could imagine. I started out in the suburbs in Blue Island. I went to the Post Robin School District until I was in the fourth grade. From fifth grade through seventh grade, I was in the Chicago public school system, which was horrible. Probably the worst 3 years of education in my life. And my mother took me out of there, put me in the Catholic school system. So I graduated from grade school at St. Denis and then went to St. Lawrence for high school. And our motto there was, come in as a boy, leave as a man. And I definitely can attest to, at the time it was an all boys school, and that's how we left, was as men. And so I finished high school at St. Lawrence, which in my opinion is the best high school in the city of Chicago, or in the Chicago area.
Yeah, except for Marian Catholic, where I went.
Oh, so.
Let's move on to crime a little bit. Ted and I are starting, sure, to focus. You know, we generally focus on kind of financial and fiscal issues, but crime is an overriding issue for the city. We've tried to tackle the numbers, at least to get a snapshot of what's going on, but we've got a lot of learning to do in terms of the causes. We got to talk to folks like you that are there seeing it to get a feel for what the causes are. Give us your sense and your perspective on that.
I think it's when people always laugh, or sometimes conservatives laugh when we say that the crime and the shootings are because of poverty, but it really is. I mean, when you don't have hope of anything better, you know, you're just going to do things that don't make sense to the rest of us. So shooting up the block, I mean, who cares if you don't have hope that there's anything better than what you have on that block? So somebody crosses you, or, you know, you have a corner that you're making money on and somebody steps into that corner, whatever the case may be, that's a cause for ending your livelihood. So you might end their life. And I don't mean to just diminish it, but it is an issue of a lack of education, educational opportunity, which manifests itself in a lack of really economic opportunity in these neighborhoods. All the money is sucked out in taxes, fees, disinvestment, and shaken up. And so if they take $10 out, they might give you a dollar, but it's for government housing instead of you actually owning something. So there's such a lack of opportunity that a depressed mindset kind of manifests itself. And when you just don't feel, again, when you don't feel that there's anything better than this, what type of respect of life will you actually have?
Sure. And how about the your recent uptick. It's been last year and a half, 2 years. Kids not in school, you know, because of COVID. Is that the driver? What do you think?
I think so. They were already getting a poor education before. Now they're getting a worse education. There's a lot of anger in some of these communities because, I mean, you have to think about it. You live in an impoverished, disinvested neighborhood. There's vacant lots everywhere. There's abandoned houses because people weren't able to afford to keep their homes. Your neighborhood is just broken down and depressed. Your mindset is depressed. Now you're not in school. Maybe the only hope you had was going to school and interacting with classmates. Now you don't even have that. It's a pandemic. So you can't go out. Everything is closed. It is just such a disastrous mindset when you look at some of these third world countries where they have civil war all the time. That's because of a depressed mindset. There's nothing to look forward to. So the next inclination is violence just to keep your little corner of the world for you. And I know that's not an easy explanation for people to understand, but that's the reality of what is going on. There's such a depressed economic and educational state that people's minds are depressed in these communities. So robbing a car and doing a joyride, or robbing, or, you know, stealing a car and selling that car for cash. Somebody's taking your corner of the world and making money off of it. You're going to fight to get that corner back so that you can provide what little bit you can for your family.
Devin, you know, this is all pretty sad stuff, right? When we're talking about the education, when we're talking about the crime, you know, I want to come back to crime. I want to come back to the politicians and your view of, you know, both sides of the aisle and how they treat, how they approach crime, how they approach the blacks and Hispanics in the South Side and West Side.
Sure.
So, but, you know, I talked about how many blacks are leaving Chicago, and, you know, it's hard to believe that that's such a big number. You know, 200,000 in the first decade of the century, and now another 85,000. Are they leaving because of all those things? Is it? Do you have a sense of why people leave in the end? Why, you know, what makes them finally break? Is it a combination? Is it one thing? You know, and is it the poor? Is it the middle class? Do you have a feel for that at all? Because I don't. And, you know, we have raw numbers, but we don't have the feel.
It's everybody. I know so many. Obviously, I'm black, so I know a lot of black people. my neighbor just put their house up for sale. They've been living next door to me for about 10 years or so. They received 5 parking tickets in a span of 3 months. They had to pay all of them except for one that I kind of helped them with the narrative to appeal the ticket. But they had received 5 parking tickets. They had like 3 or 4 boots on their cars. So it became, and these were parking tickets. They were legally parked in front of their own house, but they were still getting tickets. And so she said, look, either I pay the mortgage or I keep paying these tickets. And I would rather just move outside of Cook County so I don't have to deal with what I'm dealing with. On top of that, her mortgage payment went up because our property tax assessment went up. And so she's moving because it's just too expensive. I have family members who have left because they live in places like Roseland where they're paying high property taxes, high gas taxes, high sales taxes. They have no grocery stores. So they're paying all of this money, but then when they call the cops because something happened on the block, it takes 3 hours. It takes 4 hours if they ever come. You know, their house is broken into and they just get a report in the mail, you know, a victim report in the mail. You know, cars are broken into. So it's like, why would you pay all of this money to stay in a city where you're not safe or where the city is just going to find another way to nickel and dime you? So it's a portion. It's kind of a comprehensive list of different things. I have another. I have family members who have left because they want to live. They can't afford private school, and so they want to live in a school district where their kids are going to get better education. My sister left the city and moved to the suburbs because she feels like her 2 kids will get a better education there. So it's a myriad of different things, from public safety to high taxes to calling aldermen and not getting an effective response. It is too complicated, too expensive, and the return on investment for living in Chicago, it's just not working for most Black Americans, which is why you see almost 300,000 people gone.
How about in terms of how Blacks are treated here? Ted interviewed a young lady that moved from here to Atlanta. She perceived, rightly or wrongly, that Atlanta would be more accepting of Black people, is more integrated, and she was very pleased with her move. Is that a widespread perception, do you think, that this is not a great place for African Americans?
My grandparents fled the Jim Crow South in the 50s to come up here thinking that they would have a better life, and economically they did. But growing up, my grandfather used to say that Chicago was more racist and segregated than Vicksburg, Mississippi. And we're talking about a place where they had to step off the sidewalks if a white person was walking down the sidewalk as them at the same time. He had to go to the back of the diner to receive his food. And for him to say that it was worse here than it was down there in the 40s and the 50s, that never left my mind. And as I have traveled the country, I would say that Chicago is kind of a dark place. I love Chicago. You know, this is I think it's the best and the worst American city at the same time, because it's such a wonderful city where we love and respect everyone's heritage, but we still don't treat people very well. And Black neighborhoods have always been overtaxed and underserved, more so than any other neighborhood. And you can see that with how stagnant our wealth is and how stagnant our property values are in this city. And yet we pay the same, if not more, you know, per capita in taxes than some of the other neighborhoods. You know, we're paying property taxes on homes that are not worth anything, but we're paying it as though they're worth something. You know, a home might sell for $30,000, but you're paying $5,000 in property taxes. Whereas you go to the southwest side or on the edge of the city, your house might be worth $200,000 or $300,000, and you're paying the same amount in property taxes. So, and I don't know what is it racial, or is it just taking advantage of a group of people who you think can't fight for themselves? I don't know, you know. But the city is definitely too complicated and very corrupt. Our aldermen do not work for us. It's almost like we work for them. Our state reps and different things like that are constantly taken advantage of. And they just prop up these churches and 501c3s and c4s as though they're, you know, we get a box of food. We don't need a box of food. Give us our money back. You know, let us keep our money in our community. We don't need boxes of food. We can afford our own food if you just lift the boot of government off of us.
Yeah, and this is going back to crime a little bit, but we had a very comprehensive poll done by Real Clear of African Americans in Chicago about 12 months ago, and focused on the crime issue. And the finding was that, you know, sure, Blacks are upset about how they get treated by cops. I mean, that's a long-term problem. They got legitimate complaints. It's not just shootings. It's they got valid complaints. But they want more policing in their neighborhoods. Yes. Does that sound right to you? I mean, this defund the police thing. No, they want more cops in their neighborhood, but they want to be treated right. Does that sound right?
That's 100% what we all want. And I can tell you that Chicago government is corrupt. I grew up in a law enforcement family. My mother was a sheriff for 26 years. So for most of my childhood, and she'll, you know, we support the police and, you know, everything like that. But she will tell you that the sheriff's department was corrupt and there were bad sheriff's deputies. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood full of cops who would say, be careful. These were my friends who were white and their parents were cops. And they were telling me to be careful in our own neighborhood, you know. And so we want more police, but we want effective policing. We don't want to feel like we're in a police state in our own community where criminals are not being arrested, but we're being harassed by maybe a corrupt cop. And I know you can, you know, look in the history of the Chicago Police Department in the 90s and the 80s, where they used to torture black men into confessing the crimes that they had not committed. That's all come out recently. So I think every community wants more police, as long as they're doing what they're supposed to do and not harming law-abiding citizens, which I believe is by and large most cops, but all it takes is one. You know what I mean? And so we have to figure out a way to root out the bad cops, and for police, when they are holding their peers accountable, that they are not adversely affected or harmed because of this code of silence, if that makes sense.
Devin, some of what you said made a lot of sense earlier when we were talking about home values and property taxes. You know, Mark and I and our colleagues here at WirePoints, we did some research on South Cook, some of the cities there. Mm-hmm. And you know, we found the same thing. Home values had collapsed to 30,000, 20,000, 10,000, you know, even 5,000. And yet the tax bills were always the same. And, you know, what hit me there is that I couldn't find, and, you know, we tried to talk to politicians, the state politicians, and it's kind of hard to find, you know, how they care about it and what they're doing about it. And what struck me was, is that, you know, the tax bills never went down because the costs never went down. But the values of people's homes and the economies and the old functionality of a village or a city had collapsed. And so, you know, it comes back to, do you get a sense that any of our state politicians, I can say, do they care or do they not know what to do? Are they too busy on other stuff? Because when we were down in South Cook, we were there with a couple representatives who weren't from there, but we were all there because we cared and we wanted to speak up about it and bring attention to it. But we couldn't find the actual local politicians who were from there speaking up. So what is it? What is it? Do they care? Do they not care? And what do you want to say to them, or what do you say to them to get more attention for your community?
My hope is that they do care. The perception is that they don't. I don't like to read into other people's intentions, but when I look at my local politicians, when I look at, so in 2019, the House of Representatives for the state of Illinois had some type of property tax commission. And actually my state rep was one of the chairpersons of that commission. And they talked about, reparations driven property tax changes, and they came out with this report. It was a day late and like $2 million short of really doing anything, and they had meetings across the city, and I spoke up at one of the meetings that my state rep happened to be at, and I talked about how the plan that they came up with, there was really nothing tangible in it that would say that you're gonna fix the property tax system here. I don't know. I think they are more, their intention is to stay in power and to stay in office until they retire. So if they can kick the can down the road, because the property taxes have everything to do with pensions and all these other complicated systems that the average person, the average taxpayer doesn't know about, and they're not tackling any of that in order to change the way that property taxes are assessed. There's no change in the way the county assesses property taxes. There's no change in how they budget. In the city of Chicago, our property taxes are now tied to the consumer price index, so it will always go up and never go down. So to me, based on their actions, they don't care. They just care about keeping themselves in power and kicking whatever can down the road. And then there's a new equity program in order to help people with property tax issues, when you could literally just lower the property tax. You could literally just change the way you assess people. You could lower your budget. You could make necessary cuts. And they don't have the political will to do that, because it's about keeping jobs and not the people.
Devin, how do you reach people in your neighborhood? I know in your case, it's a lot of street leather, but how do African-Americans in your area get their news? Is it, you know, social media? Is it personal meetings? Do they watch TV news? Or what's the most effective means for leaders like you, wannabe leaders like you, to get the message out that there's a different approach to be had here?
So a lot of people watch the news, you know, MSNBC, Fox, the national news. And then I get questions based on what they see in the national news or the local news, those little 5-minute clips. I do a lot of going to community events and putting myself in front of someone's face. And then that connects me with them on social media. I send out a lot of emails through Constant Contact. It really takes a lot of wearing out shoes, though, in order to connect with people. I go to churches. I send emails to school principals. I wherever you are, I try to find a way to get to you. So that's the hard part about doing what I do, is this grassroots organizing, is that you have to do a lot more face-to-face stuff. I don't know how to play soccer, but every Saturday I play soccer with the Scottsdale Neighborhood Watch. You know, my feet hurt and I don't know what I'm doing, but it affords me the opportunity to have conversations with them afterwards.
Hey, Devin, we appreciate you being on because, you know, to be honest, like most people who listen to this show, or many, I shouldn't say most, but many, you know, don't make it to the South Side. And so it's hard to understand, right? The level of crime, not in all neighborhoods, as you mentioned, but in many parts are hard to understand. It's hard to understand how the educational results can be so low. It's hard to understand how you can have property taxes of $5,000 and yet the house is only worth $30,000, right? Those are all hard things for most functioning communities in Illinois to understand, even though there's quite a bit of dysfunction in the rest of the state. So we appreciate you sharing all this. What is it? Some closing thoughts, and Mark, if you have any final questions, but some closing thoughts for you about what people should know and hope for, you know, let's say over the next decade, you know, what is it we need to see? You know, right now it's mostly identity politics. We'd argue that our politics have gone crazy right now, right? We see what's happening across the world. What would you like to see to bring back some normalcy to either bring back normalcy or to create normalcy in the South Side? In particular, those neighborhoods that are having the hardest time.
Sure. One of the things that I would like to see is that people who are not from our community, and by that I mean anything, if you're not from a specific ethnic community, if you're not from a geographical community, when you come in and you have a solution, talk about a solution that doesn't marginalize someone. So, you know, as you mentioned, Ted, when we had our meeting, I didn't talk about being Black or, you know, this is a Black issue or versus a white issue. I said these are the issues affecting the community. And so when people come in, if you have a solution, make sure that it's something that's palatable to any community, because once you start doing the fake identity politics stuff, you know, or trying to one up one side based on using someone's race or geographical area, you're gonna lose. We can always tell when someone's not from a specific community, right? Because we all speak a different language depending on where we live. And just really focusing on solutions-based policies and politics and narratives, not capitalizing off of a lot of people, I feel like, do capitalize off of the crime. You know, they only want to come into Inglewood to talk about crime. Okay, but there's thousands of people who are losing their homes for a property tax bill as little as $500 that they might not have even known that they owed. You know, there's hundreds of people who are about to lose their homes over the Obama library. That's something that we could talk about, and that transcends race. Do you want to lose your home because of some government project that you didn't ask for? And so that, I think that's something that I would want people to know, is that all politics is local, focus on local solutions. And that's how we will be able to take back our city, our county, and our state.
Yeah. In one of your other talks, help me with the term that you used, plantation talk. I must be out of the loop on this, but what, you used it, I think, derogatorily. What does it mean, and who likes it or who doesn't like it?
I'm a Republican, so we spent a lot of time last year talking about slaves on the plantation, and you know that I call that plantation talk. Oh, brainwashed and all this other stuff. And I can assure you that Black people who tend to vote Democrat, especially on the South and West sides of Chicago, they know more about politics than the average conservative or liberal talking head. They know exactly what's going on. They know exactly what the solutions are, but nobody has come into the community to offer a solution or to talk to them about what's going on. And so this narrative that Black people live on some type of ideological or political plantation, it's offensive. My family was actually on a plantation. My mother was born on a plantation because they were sharecroppers, and that was the only job that my grandparents can get. So today, in today's age, my mother's a free thinker. My father's a free thinker. My grandparents are free thinkers. But you know what didn't happen was that only another side did not offer an alternative to what the machine in Chicago was offering. We typically have nothing but one political party on the ballot in my community, no matter what I do. So even if I didn't vote, for instance, my state rep, she had no opponent. My state senator didn't have an opponent. Water Reclamation District didn't have an opponent. None of those things had an opponent. So who would I vote for? And do I really live on a plantation? Or is it that the other side did not have the political will to offer an alternative?
So in the white suburbs, I mean, have no doubt that this debate about critical race theory, wokeism, racial power is real. I mean, Ted and I can tell you, we've been involved in this. We've been called racist and, you know, fascist, Nazis, blah, 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 on both sides. I mean, it's the people who believe in it are very sincere. And geez, I just saw a poll in Virginia that 65% of the voters think that debate they have there going on about schools and critical race theory, 65% of them, that's going to be a major topic in how they vote for governor. But I guess you're telling me that it's a bunch of white guys in the suburbs arguing about this, I think, and not so important in your neighborhood. Is that a fair summary?
If I can jump in, Devin, what did I ask you the other day? I said, and what about critical race theory? Is that a big deal here? What did you say to me?
I said, that's for white people in the suburbs. it is not an issue in the city when you're talking about 70% of our kids or more cannot read at grade level. They're graduating from high school. They can't even read the critical race theory book. So it's not something that we are talking about. Is it a bad thing? Absolutely. But we were teaching a false history before this. Most people only know, the only history they know about Black people is slavery, Jim Crow, We Shall Overcome in Martin Luther King, and then President Obama. They don't know about Ida B. Wells. They don't know really the full story of George Washington Carver. Most people don't know about Frederick Douglass. You know, all these, they don't know that the first person to die for this country was a Black man, Crispus Attucks. So since we were already learning false history, and Black people have always known that we can't look to the public school system for an accurate history on us, it's just not an issue. The issue is that our kids cannot read, they can't write, they don't know proper math, they're failing in science. And I really think that's also the issue in white suburbs and Hispanic suburbs. And, you know, that's what's at the heart of this critical race theory. I'm not saying it's not an issue, but it's a distraction from what they're really doing in the public school system, which is failing our kids in the things that matter, and also adding comprehensive sex education, which is going to over hypersexualize our children.
Devin, that's I think you're hitting a lot of the points that, you know, sadly, I think it might be an extreme in the South Side, but it's hitting across the state. It's hitting. It doesn't matter where you are, and I think we're in agreement there.
Compliments to the work you've done, and geez, you know, two kids from your school that you raised. Boy, we need to get voices like yours out, Devin. Really appreciate you coming to talk to us.
Yeah, Devin, thanks for sharing all that. And this is the Dialogue from Wire Points, and we thank Devin Jones for being with us. Thank you.
Thank you.